What I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase.
The man they used to call the Velvet Fog, which is an interesting image. We talk about word images when Patricia T. O'Connor joins us here on the Leonard LoPage Show. She is the author of a number of books on the language, most recently Origins of the Specious, but it all began with Woe Is I, and then Words Fail Me, You Send Me, Woe Is I, Junior, and whatever. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And we take your calls at 212-433-9692 when Pat joins us. Pat, you usually have something that you've been thinking about over the past month that we open with. This time it's words that have gone out of favor and then come back into favor.
Yes, sometimes it almost seems as though words come back from the dead. And I was reminded of this a few weeks ago when a researcher discovered what's now the earliest known use of the word Ms. for a title for a woman regardless of marital status.
It's not 1968?
No.
I just came up with that number. But it would be somewhere in the 60s in my imagination.
Right. Actually, it had the earliest, before this more recent discovery, the earliest one we knew of was 1949, when Mario Pei wrote that Ms. had been often proposed. And this was tantalizing because linguists, it told them that it had been around before, but they were unable to find citations. Well, now Ben Zimmer of the online magazine and website Visual Thesaurus, who used to be associated with Oxford University Press, has discovered a mention of Ms., a proposal for Ms. as a title for an unmarried woman from the November 1901 an issue of the Springfield, Massachusetts Sunday Republican.
No, of course, that was only an unmarried woman.
This was for both.
It would not reveal whether a woman was married or not.
Right, exactly. Actually, I'll read you what the writer to the at the Springfield Republican what he said. He wrote, "There is a void in the English language which, with some diffidence, we undertake to fill. Everyone has been put in an embarrassing position by ignorance of the status of some woman. To call a maiden Mrs. is only a shade worse than to insult a matron with the inferior title Miss." A little judgment in there, but he goes on to talk about how unhandy it is in signatures to letters and on the in books and all this, and then he concludes the abbreviation Ms. is simple, and he spells it MS period. He says it's simple, it's easy to write, and the person person concerned can translate it properly according to circumstances.
But it's interesting that it didn't catch on, and it caught on when it did. So sometimes words only come into use when people think that they serve a real purpose.
Right. And it went underground for many, many years. But 1901,
wow.
Who knew? But Zimmer says that the discovery was made possible because of newly digitized newspaper databases. And linguists call this process of discovering earlier uses of words antedating. And it's a great sport among them. But
I have not dated an ante for many years. I'm not going to pursue that.
Oh, I'm sure that I'll bet you have. But speaking of moving dates ahead, have you heard the word prepone?
Is that the opposite of postpone?
Yes, it is.
But I'd never heard of it.
Well, this is another one that has apparently come back from the dead. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the verb prepone, meaning to place in front of or set before, was first recorded in the mid-1549. 1549. Right.
Really?
But it was used more literally. The first reference says, "I do prepone and set the Lord always before mine eyes." So it meant physically placing something before. But that didn't really catch on. But centuries later, just before World War I, prepone was reintroduced, and I'm sure it was a whole new idea, meaning to bring forward to an earlier time. And the first reference here is a writer to the New York Times in December 1913, who wrote, "For the benefit mainly of the legal profession," I mean, why the legal profession, I don't know, but "in this age of hurry and bustle, may I be permitted to coin the word prepone as a needed rival of that much revered and oft invoked standby, postpone." Now, the interesting thing about prepone is that it didn't catch on in the U.S. or in Britain, but it did catch on in Indian English, where it's quite common, and it has been. It's right up to our current day. If you Google it, it's in the Times of India and all sorts of Indian writers.
But how useful a word is it?
Well, a couple of readers have emailed me about coming across usages of it and saying, gee, I never heard this before. This opposite of postpone, is this a legitimate word? And I guess we have to say, yeah, it's a legitimate word. And it may be coming back. We don't know. Usually people, when they're going to move a date up, they just say, let's move the date up.
Mm. I feel uncomfortable saying, let's prepone this.
Right. But, you know, years ago, if you'd called anyone Ms., you would have felt uncomfortable, perhaps. So you never know. It could catch on.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. Should we take a call?
Yes. Oh, I should mention one other thing. Last month, the word spendthrift was kind of left hanging in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And the puzzle was how something about thrift got into a word like spendthrift, which is about not being thrifty.
And we had many theories proposed.
Many theories. And the callers who called in with the theory that thrift meant one's savings were right. Thrift used to mean one's goods, one's wealth, one's savings, and a spendthrift is somebody who blew it, mm-hmm. blew all his savings.
Okay.
So there you go.
Richard from, where is it, Richmondville?
That's correct.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling in because I read an article in the Daily News, which had as a final paragraph what I consider the worst paragraph in the 21st century.
Boy, that's going to be pretty bad.
It's still
I've
early.
I've read some pretty bad paragraphs.
I know it's early, but I don't think anybody is going to top this one.
Uh-huh.
And the paragraph is, "Him and his men then stripped down to their shorts and raced to save the couple."
Him and his men?
Him and his men.
Was the man's name him?
Nope. His name was Walter Rogers, according to the previous paragraph.
Oh, my goodness.
That is pretty bad.
How could a reporter actually put her name to this article? And how could a copy editor then let something like this through?
Good question. Very
good
question.
You used to work at a newspaper. Do you think that those jobs are being eliminated and that's why?
I think that people who work at newspapers are being spread awfully thin. And besides that, I think they're very, very nervous and worried whether they'll have jobs anymore. You'd think that would make them a little more conscientious, but these things happen. I'm sorry, I don't know how.
We have to call Rupert Murdoch and find out.
I guess so.
Thank you so much for your call. I'm not sure that's the most egregious example.
I've seen some pretty egregious things.
Susan from Chelsea, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'm calling. There is a question about do you think there is any hope at all for preserving the literal meaning of literally? But I'm calling with an example from the news that still has me chuckling. And this was when Sarah Palin announced her resignation, a friend or supporter of hers issued a statement saying that now the world is literally her oyster.
I have to tell you the truth.
She should have clammed up, don't you think?
That was a pearl of a statement. I think the literal meaning of literally is slowly circling the drain. It's literally circling the drain. No, I think it's increasingly being used to underscore a figurative meaning.
The way people use really.
True.
Excessively.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really, really upset about this. I'm literally upset about this.
Are you literally exploding? I think it's too bad.
It means something.
I know. I feel the same way. There are a lot of words that I really am going to miss. There's nothing we can do about it. This thing is, it's a lot bigger than the both of us. For instance, bemused. Bemused is a very nice word, meaning puzzled or lost in thought. Yes. Now people use it to mean amused.
Yes.
Enormity, for example. An enormity is something vastly horrendous, terrible. Now people just use it to mean big.
Yeah.
Another one that I see a lot is, for example, somebody wrote, John Dillinger had multiple killings. Multiple is being used a lot these days. I think that may be a generational thing. I'm seeing it from younger people.
Yes, yes. I think it probably is.
Responsible for multiple killings.
Yeah.
And he was. Anyway, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
And we are going to sneak in another caller here who has who's one of many people to call with this same thought. Roger from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I really love your show, and I wanted to ask you this question. I'm an opera singer, so I'm really obsessed with language. And on Channel 1 and a lot of channels, the newscasters are now what I call doing the SHT disease. Instead of ST, stop, standard, stupid, they're doing stop, standard, stupid. And when I call them up and ask them, they actually call me back on their voicemail and say they don't hear it. They don't know or understand what I'm saying. And even Michelle Obama is doing it now.
But would you want Michelle Obama not to have the sh in her name?
She said actually the state. She said state the other day, which just blew my mind.
Yeah, I hear people say street, cross the street.
Yeah.
I can't account for that. I don't pretend to be any kind of specialist in phonology. It may be that there are scholars out there who can explain it. But I know it's very common, and I've gotten, I can't think how many emails about that issue.
When I was a kid, it was kind of a soulful use.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, but now it's just come into common usage. I don't know why either. I always thought it was because people had loose dentures. We want to thank you so much for calling us, and we'll be back with more of your calls to 212-433-9692. People are also writing in on our comment line, and I'll read a few of those comments as well as we continue this conversation with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of Origins. Too many books. This is taking up a long time. Origins of the Species. Species? I don't know. We'll have to talk about that.
Specious.
Woe is I. Specious. But a species, species. Well, anyway, woe is I. Words fail me. You send me. Woe is I, Junior. We'll be back after this.
Oh, what I'd give for that wonderful phrase to hear those three little words. That's all I'd give for
Carmen
the
McRae.
Rest of my day.
Before when I went into the break, Pat, of course I misspoke. I said your book was Origin of the Species when it's obviously Specious. But people do say species, and they say. Mm-hmm. Sociology or sociology.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on those words?
I think species can be either species or species. I think those are both considered correct pronunciations. Specious is just specious. It's not species.
No. Yeah, no, that's true. I just misspoke.
Richard misspoke.
Misspoke. Well, hope the whole Mishpoka appreciated that. Should we take some more calls? Well, first of all, a listener would like to know what to do when confronted by people who make mistakes of this sort.
Oh, I get asked this a lot. There's no graceful way. I started to say graceful.
Mm.
There's no graceful way to correct someone's grammar who isn't an intimate family member or spouse or something like that. I just don't know how you would do it diplomatically.
And people don't always respond. Well, I mentioned last time that I corrected somebody who had put a sign out in front of a bakery mm-hmm. and said, all baking done on the premise. And when I told them that I thought I was being friendly. I thought you uh-huh. shouldn't have a sign that's so embarrassing in front of your store. He said, some people have nothing better to do with their time.
See, I was thinking you were going to say he likes it because it brings in a lot of business, people telling him about his sign. But I guess he doesn't have a sense of humor about that.
No. Well.
Well.
And it made me feel uncomfortable about going to that bakery for a while.
It should. You know, sign makers are notorious for that kind of thing. I don't know why you would hire a sign maker and not bother to give him or her the instructions for what you want the sign to say and check it out. Yes, we have bananas with bananas and followed by an apostrophe.
Mm.
Or even worse, we have banana S apostrophe S.
Well, apostrophes seem to
be
the real problem for so many people.
Right.
It's is something. Even I do it every once in a while. My finger automatically goes for that apostrophe mm-hmm. when I don't mean to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's take another call. Cindy from Forest Hills. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Since Judge Sotomayor's nomination by President Obama and the empathy factor has been discussed over and over, I've seen often in the press and on the airwaves the word empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, the word was always empathic, not empathetic. I haven't found it in a Webster's dictionary either. Could you please clarify that?
I've answered this question before, and I think they both exist. But since things go right out of my mind as soon as I write an email about them, I'm checking.
Oh, good.
Empathic is here and empathetic is here.
Really?
Yes, separate entries. This is the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, 4th edition, which is the latest edition.
Oh.
Yeah, and it says empathetic, an adjective meaning empathic.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Empathic, of or relating to or characterized by empathy. So they're both all right.
Empathetic crept in because it's not in my older Webster dictionary.
Right.
But it feels like sympathetic.
Right.
Yes. I think it was formed on that analogy.
Thank you so much for your call. A listener would like to know if it's correct to say, as some TV commentators often do, personally, I think.
Well, there's nothing grammatically incorrect about it. Do you mean using personally as an?
Well, it does sound like you're being a bit mealy-mouthed there, doesn't it?
Right. It's unnecessary. I think
people are afraid of saying "I think."
Personally, grammatically, it's not incorrect. It's redundant, however. Sometimes someone will say it as almost a way of apologizing for what he's about to say.
Well,
it's just my opinion.
I think that sometimes we're slapped down. I remember in high school saying, that's not a good movie. And people would say, well, that's just your opinion.
Well, of course.
And of course, I would say, well, it was obviously my opinion. But mm-hmm. people do not like to hear that. They want you to couch it in, well, as far, you know, I didn't mm-hmm. particularly like it because of whatever, and give all sorts of disclaimers to soften what is just a strong feeling.
Right.
A listener also would like to know about width and breadth, because some people say height as mm-hmm. well.
I think people say height on analogy with length, probably width and breadth also. But height doesn't have the TH sound at the end. It's just height.
But you would think that it would if the language were consistent. The problem is English is not consistent.
You know, I've never checked out that particular I hate saying English isn't consistent, because there are reasons for almost everything. But I guess if it were to be parallel with length and breadth and width, people wouldn't get it, you know, confused so many times. But it's not parallel with them.
Brenda from the Bronx.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, if it were consistent, then there would be, like apathetic, then there would be empathic and sympathic.
Mm-hmm. That's true. We don't say sympathic.
Right. Anyway, my question, my husband and I were trying to decide about dodgy, and my husband thinks that dodgy came after the Artful Dodger or from it, and I think it came before.
Well, I think the Artful Dodger, I would guess, was had that name because there was already a slang expression in Dickens's time about dodging or people being dodgy or
yeah,
dodging.
That made more sense to me, but he's more educated.
Even as I learned in college, educated people don't always know all the answers.
I hope he's listening. Thank you.
But we don't know for sure, right?
I don't know.
This is the
sort
of thing somebody
say.
Should be doing in the same way that they came up with Ms.
Yes, yes. And they do that. They do that, actually.
And maybe somebody listening right now will research that. Mm-hmm. And we can find out that dodgy first, the first citation was in 1727.
Mm-hmm. I know that Mark Twain used the word dodge, meaning a scam, that kind of thing. Something you were trying to put over on somebody was a dodge. And he was, 1860s and thereafter, which is a little after Dickens, but it was in the air anyway.
But Chrysler's discontinued the Dodge, so we're not going to use that anymore. Hector from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Just want to say thanks again for having this guest on. I love when there's anything to do with words. My question is, more often than not, I hear people say a friend of mine. Is it important to qualify that the friend is yours? Clearly you would say a friend told me rather than a friend of mine told me, but I'd like clarification on that if I may.
Well, conceivably it could be a friend of someone else or a friend of the family or whatever.
But if you say a friend told me.
I know.
Me.
Generally you'd assume it was your own friend, but I wouldn't call it incorrect or anything like that. We're a little...
Right, so I'll call off the dogs now every time I hear it.
I think we're a little hard on people's speech sometimes if we expect them to be absolutely perfect and 100% non-redundant all the time.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm glad you also addressed the literal as well, because that one's irking me for a long time.
Yeah, it's going to continue to irk you, I'm afraid.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Linda... Hi, Linda from Hoboken. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I want to know the origin of the word hijack.
That's one I should know, but I don't.
I tried the OED, which I have, and that didn't clarify it.
Well, I think that jacking was something, was a phrase in the past. A holdup man was a jacker or something like that in the old days, and a lot of these words... Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, but a lot of these words come out of other words that have fallen out of usage.
Well, here I see the dictionary does say a jacker was a holdup man, and it came from the word jack, meaning to jack light. Now, what jack light means is another issue, but if a jacker was a holdup man, then I suppose hijacking would be to stop and rob something in transit, to seize control of a moving vehicle of some kind, to steal as if by hijacking. So I guess it comes from an old slang word, a jacker, as a hold-up man.
Okay. We have some listeners who've written in. For example, Maggie left a comment on our show page saying that the ST shift is comes from German. Hope says in Brooklyn she heard a lot of street for street pronunciation among her Italian-American friends. So I guess it's a German-Italian thing.
You know, I don't recall ever hearing it when I was growing up in the Midwest. I wonder if it's an Eastern thing, if it's East Coast cities.
I don't know. Okay, well, anyway, let's take another call. Michelle from Ridgewood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to say before I ask the question that I enjoy your books. I'm on a word hunt. I heard someone on the radio use the word off-put, and then I saw it written somewhere. At first, I looked up the word, and I didn't find it, and then I saw it written somewhere as, and the person used it, off-putting, and then I said, well, gee, this is twice. It has to be a word. So I looked it up, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I've been looking in different dictionaries, and I haven't found it.
Well, it's a... it began as a kind of a humorous or whimsical reversal of the expression to put off.
Okay.
If something really puts you off, turns you off. So that if you're put off by something, you find it off-putting. It began as a kind of jokey usage. It's off-putting. And there have been other formations. Maybe I won't say them on the air, but
you don't want to encourage
people. Blanking, right?
But off-putting is now common usage, isn't it?
Right, it's pretty common. You don't find off-put that much. It off-put me, but you find it used as an adjective. It was off-putting.
It's an uncomfortable word for me.
You find it uncomfortable?
Yeah. I mean, I won't say it, but it doesn't bother me when other people say it.
Uh-huh.
A listener asked about how restaurant bills can be checks. Because checks also are cash of a sort.
Well, that's a good question. Let me see if there's anything in the dictionary about it.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
It may just be that the French use the word check?
I don't know.
You're looking
yeah,
at
yeah, I'm looking at, oops, no wonder. Looking in the wrong place.
Sorry. We don't know how to spell the word check. It's with
I
a
was
Q-U-E,
looking under
right?
Cheek. Okay, check. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. A bill at a restaurant or bar. That's one of the meanings. Or, well, an action that stops something. Let me look down in the, let's see.
I think we're going to have
from
to hold
the old French eschec, from the Persian king or check. It comes from chess, or it's related to the chess usage.
Wow, this is complicated.
Yes, it is complicated. I may have to come back and talk about that one. And there's a long word history underneath it.
Well, we should point out, because we're running out of time, that if people want to put a question to you directly, they can email you at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. I have to point out, you have to know how to spell the word grammar, because people complain to me all the time they haven't gotten through to Pat, and it's because they've misspelled grammar. You can go to grammarphobia.com and click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. And, of course, you can also read any number of her books. The most recent one is Origins of the Specious. And, Pat, I look forward to seeing you again August 19th.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, we'll talk to editorial writer at The Washington Post and MSNBC contributor Jonathan Capehart about President Obama's much-anticipated speech at the NAACP Centennial Convention. And then a woman talks about converting her small urban lot in Oakland, California, into a bustling farm complete with chickens and 300-pound pigs. Plus, our latest underreported segment looks at the cult-like New York Independence Party. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Nicole Silversack, Miranda Schaefer, and Alex Conrad. Jason Isaac was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.